That seems appropriate.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, Blowing Kisses, this is Swan from the basement of the Velo Bike Shop, and you're listening to Ink and Worm. The act of blowing kisses originated in Mesopotamia as a means to gain favor with the gods, so...
Yeah.
Interesting.
I
like blowing kisses. Mm-hmm. Welcome. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being here, my friends. I have Lawrence Wooster, we're catching up, but quit his day job to pursue his dream job of being a writer. And he brought his friend Oscar Prado. And you guys both have been in and out of different literary communities and were in a rap group together.
Correct.
Called the, I had it written somewhere, the Locust Crew.
Locust Crew, yeah, like the plague.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Are you guys still rapping?
Not as much anymore. I decided to redirect some of my creative energies into prose, as they say. We get together sometimes, freestyle a little bit.
Yeah. I've been writing a little bit, but not as much as I used to. I also am in the process of quitting my day job, so maybe I'll have more time for music now.
To pursue his dream of being an Uber driver.
Oh, brilliant.
That and music.
I almost mentioned your day job because that's all I got from internet stalking because I met you today.
Yeah.
And so now I'm kind of glad that I didn't because then it would have been like, no, that's not.
Yeah.
That's not what I'm about. So, have you guys read anything delicious lately?
Delicious. I've read a couple disappointing things lately.
Oh,
which
that's
is not good.
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah. In the sci-fi world, there's always sequels, right? Everything has a sequel.
Oh, and
every once in a while.
And sometimes they shouldn't.
Although Star Wars being the exception, for sure.
Which brings us to a great segue.
That was
an amazing
Star
Wars.
Intro.
Yeah, coming out of nowhere, not that I opened with a theme song or anything, but Star Wars. Let's talk about Star Wars.
Yes. I'm so excited. I'm going to see it this Thursday.
Congratulations.
Yes, Battery Park City, 7 p.m. And then the next day, I think my buddy got tickets for like the 11 a.m. show, too. So I'm going to have
on
two
IMAX.
Viewings. On nice. IMAX or
right.
One of those things, like a 3D.
A special thing.
Yeah.
I was exposed to Star Wars because my brother, of course, was geeking out on it all growing up.
Mm-hmm.
What was your story? Was this like a family thing that has always been there?
Well, it was definitely a family thing. I got more into it. I had seen the movies and then the special edition movies came out in the, late 90s? And me and my father and my brother, I have one very distinct memory of like rushing out from high school to see one of the movies with them in Sheepshead Bay. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that got me really into it, just to like ratchet up my dork level a lot. So, you know, Magic the Gathering, the card game?
Yeah.
There was a Star Wars kind of, it was like a game like that, a collectible card game.
Uh-huh.
Oh my gosh. I must have had 5,000 Star Wars cards.
5,000?
I was crazy about it.
Did you carry them around in a toolbox?
No, I had one of those fancy binders, like a three-ring binder. The pages were sleeves for cards.
Yeah, several of those, right?
Several of those. I kept them in the boxes. But then Hurricane Sandy happened, and they were all in my basement in Canarsie, and the hurricane waters came through. And
nature reclaimed Star Wars.
Flooded it all. It was terrible.
And there went... That's how you lost your childhood.
Exactly. Childhood. Oh, Childhood's End.
That happens to us.
Childhood's End. Another great sci-fi book coming out as a show on the Sci-Fi Channel very soon.
Oh, who wrote it?
I think it was Arthur C. Clarke.
Okay.
Yes.
I won't quiz you, but I will fact check and make sure that's correct in the show notes.
Cool.
And if you are curious and want to know, I'll be posting that next Friday. So,
nice.
There'll be a lot of corrections because I have no idea what you're
Yeah. It's kind of funny because I have to go through and listen to the show because I'm like, okay, what books did we mention? Mm. And I'm like, noticing the things that I like and don't like and improving. So it's a good feedback loop for me, I think.
Absolutely. I would just say the other thing that got me the way Star Wars really kind of wormed its way into my life. Its ink wormed its way into my life.
So punny.
It was actually the Expanded Universe novels. There's a whole world. There must be hundreds of books, comic books, all sorts of different things that are written in this universe, but they're not what they call canon, right? Anymore, at least.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Disney bought Star Wars from George Lucas, and all of that stuff, all of these people spent all this time writing, is now kind of
gone.
It's like, yeah, it doesn't count anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
it was good stuff.
He, as if I'm remembering correctly from my senior year of high school, he basically sat down and was like, George Lucas was like, okay, what are all the archetypes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now I'm going to write a story about all the archetypes. And basically it was like Joseph Campbell was his like partner in crime, I suppose you could say, in creating Star Wars, which is pretty interesting.
It is. It's totally interesting. I love it.
I love that there's nothing new, and yet still, like, new things are coming out. So you have these dichotomies of, like, everything is, in some sense, archetypal, and it's been done before, and yet you can, like, still create these really great inspirational
Absolutely.
We had a song stories. About that.
Did we?
Yeah, definitely.
What was it called?
I don't remember. I'm going to look it up in a few minutes. That was the whole point of the hook, is that nothing is original, and everything is, you know, a copy of something else, right?
Wow.
That's definitely a song of ours.
Yeah, you remember that, right?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, it's a hook. Watch, I'll find it.
Luke Skywalker is Moses in a lot of ways. He's the prince that gets removed from his heritage and has to kind of work his way back to find out who he is and redeem his people. It's totally mythological, which is one of the reasons why when people get upset with George Lucas a little bit, especially with the prequels, about how the quality of the dialogue is janky or whatever. But they're forgetting that it's not necessarily meant to be real life. It's not meant to really seem like real life. It's supposed to seem like a myth, and people talk that way in myths, you know?
So yeah.
I don't have the same problem.
There's differences in voices. Are you talking about like they don't talk like we do today?
Especially with in episodes 1, 2, and 3 with Anakin and Padme when they're falling in love, and they just have these conversations that are kind of like, oh, just like
painful.
Just they're silly. They're just it's not great. It isn't great writing, but I think it fits perfectly because it's not supposed to be kind of like normal conversation. It's operating in this mythological space.
Yeah.
So I think people judge it too harshly.
It's like a dream world.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
I just read a book that's applicable, well, just a couple weeks ago, by Orson Scott Card and Philip Athens, called Writing Fantasy and Science Fiction, which actually like touched base on a lot of really fascinating things, even if you're not looking to write. Mm-hmm. It was really interesting to read a book about the genres, really well researched, really well written. And that's my huge like platform is like you can read about anything if the writing is good. You can read about underwater basket weaving. You can read about squirrel calling, and like you can read about anything because good writing is good writing. And if it's good writing, it's going to engage you. And this book definitely did that with me, even though it was like, you know, not really something that I was going to take and put into action life.
You're not going to write a sci-fi novel?
Well, you know.
Now you could. You have the tools.
It's never too late.
I could. And I actually, when I was traveling recently, had an idea come to me, which was really exciting because I haven't had that for a really long time because I haven't been writing. So, you know, but right now it's a seed and we're not going to rip it up to see how the roots are doing. We're just going to let it sit under the ground for a while.
Sometimes you gotta get the unconscious do its work.
Yeah, I really like something he says, though. He says he talks about the division between science fiction and fantasy a lot, which I find valuable. And he says kind of a general, good, simple rule of thumb is if the story is set in a universe that follows the same rules as ours, it's science fiction. If it's set in a universe that doesn't follow our rules, then it's fantasy. In other words, science fiction is about what could be but isn't, and fantasy is about what couldn't be.
That is quite interesting.
Yeah.
I I agree, and I think, just to go back to Star Wars for a second, people often talk about Star Wars as like the paragon of the sci-fi epic, right?
Yeah.
But it's not. It's not science fiction, especially by that.
Yeah.
It's fantasy, actually. And when another beef people have with the original, or the prequels, rather, is the whole midichlorian thing, kind of scientificizing the Jedi.
Uh-huh.
It's made up a word.
explaining it rationally. Yeah. Like, this is why they can do what they're doing. Sure.
That's why she has the radio show, because she knows how to say things.
Oh, thanks.
But yeah, that, I mean, that kind of took it, I think, too much in the other direction. So
it's such a thin line.
It is a thin line.
And yeah, and I,
and good writing is good writing. So why?
Exactly. I have a problem with the whole literary genre division too, and I think sci-fi gets a bad rap in that classification.
Well, part of it is there is so much, and especially in this day and age where it's so easy to put content out there. There's a lot of really strange, I mean, even strange is not bad, but there's just, I think it's the poor writing. It's just like things that are getting out there that aren't clean. Somebody doesn't have an editor. They haven't read what's out there. They haven't, you know, written and found their own voice, and they're just like pushing out stuff.
So it gives it a bad name.
So people are like, oh, I tried to read some science fiction books or whatever, and they were impossible. And even I struggle because I want it to be real, but I understand that it's not real. But in one sense, like, I want, you know, I want the author to treat themselves seriously when they're writing.
Mm-hmm. So as a writer, Lawrence, how do you feel about people who see science fiction that way?
Who I mean,
because you're a science fiction writer, right?
That's what I try to be. But that's the thing. I don't necessarily put that that word right there. I don't say I'm a science fiction writer. I say I'm a writer because I read a quote once, something about, you know, they call it speculative fiction, right? Science fiction, fantasy, whatever it is, it's about, it's speculation, it's imagination. But really, if you think about it, like, all fiction is speculative or else it'd be nonfiction, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to come up with something
You're like, you're making things up either way. Just because mine has spaceships doesn't make it any less valuable.
Yeah.
I don't know if you were listening to a show. My first show, I talked to Elia and Susan, and we talked about how Margaret Atwood uses science to write her things. So people talk about, like, where did you get these ideas? Where did you, like, where this come from? And she's like, it's all science. It all could happen. It's all happening now.
Yeah.
And so that's, I think, about Star Wars. You know, in some senses, it's like, yeah, it's like spaceships and all these things and all these different races and all these, and yet it's like, but it could
yeah. And think about Margaret Atwood too. She is probably, I think, the person who I can think of off the top of my head who most successfully, like, stands astride,
broke out of the genre.
Who else, like, what, I don't even know.
I don't
literary
know.
Science fiction, like, who's writing
yeah
that
once
nowadays?
You get tagged as that, it's kind of hard.
Did you ever read The Road by Cormac McCarthy?
I did not. I saw bits of the movie, and I understand the plot line.
Right.
And it's dark, and it sounds
it's
like
so
something
dark.
I would like to read. There's a lot of books on my list.
I'm sure. but that's great. I mean, he's super well-known for being a very literary type, right? What, all the pretty horses, all the wild horses?
All the pretty horses.
All the pretty horses.
Yeah.
We'll fact check that.
Yeah.
I'll fact check.
but yeah, I mean, The Road is great, and it's not, there's no spaceships, there's no aliens, it's just this aftermath story, and it's so human. I think that's people's problem with a lot of sci-fi, is that it loses that human element.
Yeah.
It's not a human kind of story.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, but he definitely, it's all about the relationships, it's all about the people.
Yeah, and even, like, races that are not human in stories, like, you still, they have to have enough human in them for people to, like, to get it.
To identify.
Maybe? Yeah, you have to, it's true, I think. So when you were a kid, when did this, like, science fiction writer, Lawrence, start to become expressed?
Good question.
That is a very good question. I have two memories. Well, actually three. I guess the first was being very young, like in fourth or fifth grade, the Power Rangers just came out. And me and my friends would draw these pictures of, like, because we had just learned curse words and whatnot. So we draw these pictures of, like, dirty Power Rangers.
This is getting weird.
Come up with these whole characters. It was very strange. We would hide them, like, the walls of our cafeteria were lined with extra crates of, like, tomato sauce and stuff. So we would hide the pictures between these crates. And then one day they were gone. Like, some janitor, some cafeteria worker
they
opened
found
it up.
Them all.
Right. So there was that. Then a couple years later, I was in a summer camp at, I want to say, Brooklyn College. And there was like a computer section where you got to use a computer. Mm-hmm. And they had this, it was like a slideshow kind of thing. But it was like you had animations and little clip arts. You could like kind of tell a story. And I got really into that. And I was like, I can tell this whole story. And I started writing like a sci-fi fantasy thing. And then
based on the pictures you saw?
Or based on something in my head. I don't know. There was a princess involved and I'm not
nice.
Really sure.
Girl power.
Right. but yeah, actually, I mean, it was more recently that I really kind of seriously dedicated myself. I would say in the last probably 3 or 4 years where I got really into it. My novel that I'm working on.
Mm-hmm. Do tell.
My big idea, which is, you know, coming along very, very slowly. I think the first draft of that I did probably 5 years ago. So it's been
What's it called?
What draft are you on now?
I mean, I am on, I think the first thing I wrote I lost. Mm-hmm. Right? The first, but I'm happy because it wasn't
yeah,
right.
First drafts, yeah. It's usually fine.
Most of this is also like applied to our music. It usually goes the same way.
Yeah.
We lose the first draft,
right.
Then what happens?
Exactly. And then we record it, and then we don't finish it.
so but, it's consistently
so
on
it's
the first
true to
draft.
Life.
It is. Yeah, I would say I'm like, it's a solid, I've kept the second bit, and I'm pretty far along, but it's a big project. So I kind of stopped doing that and started writing some short stories. Because like he said, the thing I've always had difficulty with artistically, whether it's music, whether it's writing, is the finishing, right?
Letting
the,
go.
The beginning is easy. But
editing?
Yeah.
So what wall did you hit with that? Just the editing?
With the novel?
Yeah.
Just that the way I conceive of it, it's huge.
It's a long story.
It's a long story. It's going to be, I mean, I know where I want it to go. It's going to be epic and big. I want to write something like a little Game of Thrones-esque in which there's this whole world and tons of characters weaving in and out, and you don't really know all the relationships. And it's just, I mean, it's hard to conceive of all that, to hold it all in your head, you know?
Lawrence thinks about it way far in advance. So he has all this whole story in his head, but it just takes a while to put it down.
George R. R. Martin has a guy that he employs, or maybe he doesn't employ, but he's like a works with,
mm-hmm.
Who is his like his fact checker, his
holder of
his
ideas,
omnibus. Like he knows everything, keeps track of all the characters and the, you know.
Well, you would have to. I feel like that things that become that complex. You have to have an assistant.
Mm-hmm.
Like you'd have to have multiple people keeping all that straight. Because fact checkers, how often do you like watch a movie or something and you're like, whoa, what just happened? Like some small detail, like
continuity.
No, she had a towel over her shoulder and now it's like on the floor. When did that happen?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So
apparently, somewhere in Game of Thrones, there's somebody has a horse that all of a sudden switches genders in the middle of the first book.
Oh,
he missed one. Yeah.
That's what I enjoy about observing his writing process, is that I get to, like, see it as it happens. And then I get to, like, give feedback,
well,
and it's, like, a live thing. So I get to be, like, a sounding board. And sometimes some of my suggestions and ideas make it to his work, which is really cool for me.
You're like, yes.
Well, definitely my sounding board. I definitely bounce a lot of stuff off. And that's, like, off you. That's, like, I mean, my favorite part about writing is the ideas, right? And the idea generation. And just this kind of, you know, taking your mind somewhere. But also, and you started, I showed him a short story and he's like, oh, I have an idea for a character. And he wrote like a little bit, you know, came up with this idea.
I actually wrote
Razor Thor,
the first draft of this character.
And then I took it and I ran with it, wrote a whole story, finished his story for him.
Good
stuff.
Because we've been making music for so long together, it's like easy for us to get into this creative space, this brainstorming space, which is a lot of fun for me.
I call it simpatico.
Simpatico. It's a good word.
I'm saying, add it to your list.
Yeah, my list of words. Speaking of, I don't have my word for the end of the show, so I'll think about that while we're talking. Thanks for tuning in. This is Ink and Worm. You're listening to my guest, Lawrence, talk about his writing process, and I also have his friend, Oscar, and I'm your host, Swan. This is streaming live on Radio Free Brooklyn out of the Velo Bike Shop in Bushwick. Hooray!
Hooray! What a lovely little bike shop, too.
It is.
Very cute.
Thank you. It is a good little shop.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm like glowing with pride from that. So let's see. I have talking points unless you wanted to speak more about the collaboration. Well, let's speak more to that because there's like this, you almost have to be split personality to be a writer because it's, you need the community, you need the ideas, you need to like talk to people and have your, you know, it's like, knowing your genre, it's like knowing you know the structure around a good story, mm-hmm. you know, the archetypes,
mm-hmm.
but it's also sitting down alone at a computer for hours and hours and hours and days and days and days,
mm-hmm. And being by yourself. Yeah, it's
a very solitary thing, right? And you speak about people's criticism of science fiction being it loses the humanity of it. Well, you would think so, right? As a writer, you kind of detach yourself, so
that well,
makes sense. Interesting. Yeah, you're like, I haven't talked to someone in 5 days.
Right.
Of course, this character is going to be a little murderous or something. I don't know.
Exactly.
He forgot how to talk to people too.
Do you ever feel like your characters when you're writing them?
I not my characters too much, but I definitely noticed about myself. I think the first time I noticed was reading Catcher in the Rye. Was that I started to imbibe the personalities of the characters I was reading.
Mm. And
I
would Isn't start that the to book feel... that a lot of murderers read before they murder someone?
Better watch out, guys.
It's interesting. Kind of dangerous.
Also, you've heard the concept of the flaneur?
No.
The flaneur.
That's another good word.
wonderful word. The flaneur is somebody who practices flânerie. You can probably tell it's a French word. and I believe it comes from the poetry of Baudelaire. Okay. Who was writing...
Wow, right there's going to be a lot of fact-checking.
So he was writing in Paris, where you just were, right?
Yes.
And right as kind of modernity was really starting up and the world was kind of changing a little bit and cities
Industrial Revolution?
I think...
Pre.
Post, like, what, 1800s? That's definitely going to need fact-checking.
Oh,
late 1800s? But the flaneur is a character unique to the city. He's an urban dweller, and it's this idea that I love, and I think it speaks to the idea of a writer. It's somebody who walks around the city observing, who is simultaneously in the crowd, but not of the crowd. So that's exactly what you're saying, right? You have to be with people, right, and be around them and learn from them and talk to them, but there's something that sets you apart too. You're a little bit different. You stand out from the crowd. You put yourself apart from the crowd by the act of talking about the crowd, you know? So that's how I see myself, I guess.
Huh. Yeah, I think that I can see that.
Flaneur.
In but not of.
In but not of. Yes, in but not of.
Back up to my talking points. Well, you guys were rapping.
We were.
We rap.
Where did you meet and when did you start rapping?
Oh, this is a good story. You should
tell
it.
Yeah, good story. Oscar, do tell.
We met in college.
Good old Vassar.
Good old Vassar College. And we were friends. We started listening to the music. And this one time we took a bus to Boston to watch this rapper we listened to called, his name is Sage Francis. And he was performing. There was this young guy, Mac Lethal, that was opening for him. And he had recently come in second at the Scribble Jam competition, which is like a freestyle battle competition, which we had seen. So we were really excited about it. We took a bus to Boston. We met up with
Mac,
right? Our friend Mac was there. We went to the show, and it was really cool. It was really inspiring. We were about to be sophomores in college, maybe.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. And then on the bus on the way back, we're both hanging out, just like listening to music. And we look at each other, and it's like, hey, man, what are you doing?
I was like, oh, I'm rapping in my head.
And I was like, oh, man, me too. I had just started like practicing freestyle in my head. So he was doing the same thing on the bus. So we were just really inspired by seeing other people doing this independent music. And after that, we started trying to take it more serious. We had other friends that were writers, really good writers, that were really inspiring for us. Mike Quachi Parker was a really good poet. So then we started writing, and we wrote our first little song called Steps to Success, which was pretty good. It's still a fun song to listen to.
How many steps are there?
Just three.
Three.
What are the steps?
The first step is knowledge.
The second step was action. And then we were kind of...
The third step is more nebulous. This is where we get stuck.
Like life? You're like, one, two.
It's like the underwear gnome.
It's like what?
It's like the underwear gnome?
Yeah, from South Park. It's like step one, collect all the underwear. Or socks. Collect the socks. Step two.
I like underwear
question
better.
Mark. Step three, like success.
I never heard of that.
I got that all wrong. No need to fact check that. That is not fact.
I don't really watch South Park, and I'm not quite sure why, because intellectually it's great. Current.
Yeah.
It's interesting, and yet when I watch it, I'm just like, I don't want to be watching this. I'd rather read a book for a walk.
This is a very old episode.
Do a handstand. Although I've been shown the episode on Mormonism anytime someone finds out that I used to be Mormon, they're like, oh, have you seen? And I'm like, yes, like six times. Maybe that's why I don't like it. That's the one episode of South Park I know.
Have you seen or seen any of Book of Mormon?
Uh-uh.
No? Because that's supposed to be fantastic.
It's pretty fun.
I've heard, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you saw it.
It won awards.
Yeah,
so that means it's good.
God's big and famous. Yeah. But yeah, it's been that was about the hip-hop Locust Crew hip-hop origin story is probably...
Was that fairly told?
That was fairly told. I think it was probably 12 years ago that happened at this point. Yeah. Maybe 13 years ago.
And you have both evolved. And I remember a conversation with you where you told me how you kind of shifted gears from rapping. Do you want to tell that story again?
Yeah, you know, I guess last summer, we started linking up with this girl, Giovanna, and she's also a rapper, used to work with Oscar. Super, super talented woman. One of the most talented people I've ever met.
It's true.
Very, very dedicated, too. And we started collaborating with her, and we had a couple great sessions. We helped her record some of her work. We recorded some stuff together. And it was interesting because it was simultaneously like inspiring, but kind of made me a little, you know, I had a little crisis of confidence doing it because she was just so talented. And then the real kicker was that she was also, like I said, so motivated. So she
followed through and finished things.
And that was just something that we weren't as good at. Uh-huh. And then I just, you know, I started to really kind of do some soul searching and found out that if you're going to do something, you got to do it. And I just didn't have that.
It's not in you?
It wasn't in me. And I think it takes a lot of bravery to admit that, right?
It's a very vulnerable moment.
Well, yeah, I wonder. I like the vulnerability. I wonder, I think, you know, as a human being, I'm, of course, going through my process of, like, what is my life about?
Of course.
What am I meant to do? And I'm having a lot of internal discussions about passion versus choice. Mm. And also, like, you know, sometimes you have to choose something. And then my little mantra with certain things is done is better than good.
Mm.
Like sometimes I'm going to do things that are shit and I'm going to just say, well, at least it's done.
And you learn from it, right?
Yeah.
Which is the most important thing.
I like that.
Maybe.
Done is better than good. I mean, you know, when it comes to writing like first drafts, especially sometimes you really do just have to get it done and you can make it good later, right?
Yeah.
So I hear that. I like that. Yeah. That's awesome.
Your story about transitioning.
Yeah, and I've been writing fiction for a very long time, and even before that happened, I had been working on some of my more recent, you know, science fiction material, and I just, it was interesting as I stepped away from the rap game, as I retired, as I like to say. Not fake Jay-Z retired either, like, I think.
There's no comeback.
There's no comeback. I, yeah, I started to feel more inspired. And I don't know, do you feel, I really do feel like inspiration is something that happens somewhere outside of us and then comes into us, you know? Yeah. And it's
waves.
It's hard to have control over.
Well, my best things have been channeled.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
My best things, I like spit it out, and then I'm like, "Wow,
that's
awesome. Where did that come from?" Like, because it doesn't. I don't feel ownership. I just feel gratitude.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, that started happening to me with fiction. So I just kind of, I kept at it, and I wrote a couple stories, worked more on my novel.
And the question that all writers get asked, fiction writers, how much is stemmed in real life, rooted in real life, and how much is just you creating worlds?
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, yeah, it really, it doesn't have a lot to do with me. I sometimes will draw like characters, I'll kind of base them on people, like archetypes that, mm-hmm. that are or people that I've met. I'll kind of borrow personality traits, but
I've always wanted to write a story that had a character that only wore one shoe.
Only wore one shoe.
Like he had 2 feet,
yeah,
but only wore one shoe. And it would be like this random, like, why is this person only wearing one shoe? I haven't figured it out yet. If you guys want to steal that, well, you know, I can't give away everything. But this is a plug, inspiration.
It reminds me of the Phantom Tallbooth.
I have some ideas.
Maybe that's where I got it from.
The guy who grows down from the...
Oh.
Yeah.
It's kind of different.
I haven't read that in so long.
I know, me neither.
I could reread that this week. I'm doing rereading. Oscar, what's your relationship with words? You said something very witty before the show.
Oh, I did?
About books.
Oh, man. I don't know.
And Star Wars.
I'm not sure. I mean, I like... Oh, yeah. I remember now. I like books. No, I really do enjoy books, and I've read a couple. I have a lot of books. What I was saying is that, you know, I kind of treat books like people who collect Star Wars things, street Star Wars things, that I like to buy them, but I like to keep them in their original mint condition, so I usually just don't open them. And I have a really nice, a good-looking library that would make anyone think that I'm, like, super well-read and intelligent.
It's a front.
It's a front, yeah. I mostly just, like, watch movies about books, which I enjoy. But it's always cool for me because Lawrence is always like, oh, yeah, I read that book, like, 5 years ago. And, like, everything that comes out that becomes popular,
he's already on it.
They've been mining my genre. They have been mining my genre.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good book movies based on books coming out these days.
I'm making a Moby Dick movie, too.
I saw that. Yeah. I've never read.
Yeah, I started and I couldn't go through.
But sometimes you're not ready for things.
That's true.
I've talked to people that don't like that book at all, and I talk to people that are like, I kept waiting to get to the boring parts, and then they never happened. So I think it's just like where you're coming. Well, this is another thing I've been exploring with people, is the fact that your response to a book is more, a lot of times when you're reading a book, the relationship that you build with that book is based on where you're at and not what happens in the story at all.
Oh,
so sometimes things that you read, you're just like, oh, that's awful or whatever. And then years later, you're at a different place and you go back and read it. And it's like so poignant and inspirational. So it's like this strange thing of like you are reading yourself mirrored through this book, perhaps.
I remember talking with you at length about Infinite Jest, right?
Yes, I knew this was going to come up. You were trying to get me to read it, and I was like, oh, look how big it is. It's such a commitment. And I started it, and I was like, oh, this is something that I think you have to be in a particular mood for.
It's intense. But what you were just saying about how what you bring a lot, right? And it's reading a book is often like reading yourself in a mirror. I mean, with Infinite Jest, I got that right away about it. You know, you ask somebody what that book is about, and because it's about so many different things, that what they say really reveals more about them than it does
You're
about
like,
the book
What did you pull
itself.
From it?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. You should read it, Swan. It's amazing.
It's on the list. I just haven't gotten around to it yet. Do you guys go to book events around town?
Haven't, no. No,
not on purpose. I've walked into book events. And I was like, what is this? They make events around books?
Why are there so many people here right now? I came here to be alone.
I don't get out much. No, I do have this one book that I brought because I think it's a neat story, you know. Oh. And you said it's about books and relationships.
Please share.
So,
this is a cool story.
This Thursday, I went to a former coworker of mine's. He's retiring. It was his little retirement party where I used to work. So I went to see him. Part of it, he emailed me, told me about it, and he said that he had a copy of his book to give to me.
Uh-huh.
So this is a book that he wrote about, I think in like the late 70s, he took some trips through Central America while they were going through a lot of changes. The social, political situation there was, there was a revolution going on in Nicaragua. And he went there and he met this family in the border of Nicaragua and Honduras whose whole town had been destroyed by American troops that came in. The Contras came in. They bombed the place. So they were all displaced. They had to go somewhere else. But he went there and met the family like a few years later, like 6 years later, and they were talking about going back and rebuilding. And part of it was to rebuild a school because since the war had occurred, all the children had to travel, you know, something like 8 miles every day through the woods to get to another school in a different part. And they had to be very careful about which path to take because there were mines all over the place.
That's
so
crazy.
The older brother had to, you know, take a group of like 7 kids, including his little 5-year-old brother that was like, you know, super hyper all over the place. And he was responsible for helping these kids. So he wrote this this book about it. And what's really cool is that a few years ago, when he was in the process of writing it, he invited me to come with him to Nicaragua to look for that family again. So it had been like 20-something years or something like that. And I went with him, and we traveled to Nicaragua. He's got family over there. And we found this family, this like one rainy, dark night in the middle of the woods. There's absolutely no electricity there. I mean, we managed to find them, and it was really cool. So I just got this book. I started reading it, but it's called it's written in Spanish. It's called No Le Temas a la Montaña, which means Don't Fear the Mountain, by Dixon Valderruten. And it's cool because the protagonist, the whole family, like I got to meet them in real life way later. Yeah. Now all the kids have their own kids. And you know, it was really, really an awesome experience.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So
if I don't speak Spanish, I can't read the story?
Not now, not yet.
It will be translated.
I hope so.
We'll just have Oscar come over and like read it to you and translate.
Oh, yeah. Here's an interesting thing. I've taken Spanish 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
I took 2 years in college and I had 4 years in high school. And I can't speak Spanish worth beans. And when people speak Spanish, I understand like barely what they're saying. I'm like, what is wrong with me? I feel like I should be better at Spanish.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
it's tough.
Live in the city for a couple more
immersion.
Years. I feel like it'll happen. Yeah. It's kind of hard.
You got to speak it. It's the same thing when I went to France. Like I was studying a little bit, but it's not till you're like talking to people, the stuff starts to like set.
Absolutely.
Sit in your mind.
Parlez-vous français?
Oi.
Well, this guy speaks 3 languages.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, I try.
What's the third?
Portuguese.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, do you ever get Spanish and Portuguese confused?
Sometimes a couple words.
Because they're so similar.
Yeah. A couple words you might mix up.
Palabras.
In different
intonations. But yeah, so I actually went with him. They were making a documentary about it, so I'm hoping they will translate it and maybe the documentary will come to be. But that was the reason for that trip.
That's awesome.
Great.
Yeah.
That's so neat.
Thanks. I'm excited. For sharing.
Yeah.
So, speaking of events, thank you for the tangent. I'm part of what I'm trying to do is for my sake, see what's happening in the city and kind of, you know, there's always stuff happening. And also anybody listening, you know, maybe something will strike your fancy. So I'm really excited about an event happening on Monday, tomorrow, at the community bookstore. It's called Talking Illustration with Magali Bonoil, Marianne Dubuque, and Maria Popova, which is pretty awesome. And that's... again, community bookstore at 7.
Who are those people?
Maria Popova is the only one I know, and I know her from Brain Pickings. She has a really interesting website that she reads books and then writes articles about them. Mm. And they're really well written. They're very like intelligent and inspiring. And she has this that is ongoing based on user donations. So it's kind of one of these like pay what you can.
Okay,
cool. Services of, you know, supporting artists. And she's a writer. Mm. Supporting artists that you can because you like what they're doing. Also, Monday night, Housing Works is having Theater of the Oppressed, the best but not the rest, at 7 p.m. There, on Tuesday, will be a reading at Housing Works called It's Too Cold for This, a special Christmas reading, also at 7 p.m. Hmm. Wednesday, there will be story time at Housing Works at 10. They've got a little clump there. Also, at the Central Branch of the Brooklyn Library, Tris Stein will be talking about Brooklyn Secrets at 7 p.m.
Ooh, are they going to talk about the secret theater?
I don't know.
You know how the library is like shaped like a book, right? Like
yeah.
An open book.
Yeah.
So, and it has the part of the spine has a curve in it, so at the front, and it's a big plaza right in front.
Uh-huh.
There's a theater directly under that plaza.
What?
Yeah.
How do you know about this?
I mean, I know things, man. I think it might have been on the show.
Sounds like
Secrets of New York.
Terribly kept secret, if you know it.
Yeah, if you know it. Just kidding. Quickly, I will go through this list. There's always a lot. Thursday, The Moth is going to be at Housing Works. Get tickets for that. It's $8 at 7 p.m. And Amy Schoen is going to host Judith Wellman talking about Brooklyn's Promised Land, 7:30 at the Park Slope branch of the Brooklyn Library. Annie Baker and Lynn Tillman variety show at McNally Jackson Books at 8 p.m. Saturday, Brooklyn's youngest author, Anaya Willibus? I don't know if I mistyped that. Anyways, Brooklyn's youngest author, I'm not sure how old she is.
I really want to know.
Damn. I'll look it up. She's going to be speaking at 11 a.m. at the Mill Basin Brooklyn Library branch. And last, at the Central Branch at 4 p.m. on Saturday, Brooklyn Chamber Music is happening. Mm. So, all the things.
It's a lot of book events.
Yeah, it is.
Who would have thought?
Well, sometimes I have like three different conflicting ones that I want to go to in one night. It's like we live in a mecca for like the literary world or something.
I mean, I think we live in a literary golden age at this point.
Yeah, there's a lot of easy access to what's happening a lot of people being encouraged in a way that used to be different.
Absolutely.
But it means you have to have a day job, too, because it's like the industry is changing. You can't really...
So you can self-publish much easier.
Make a living.
Yeah.
Similar with music, but then you have an oversaturation in the market.
Yeah.
It doesn't say on the website. That's probably why I didn't.
How old she is?
Yeah. That's probably why I didn't include it. I was like, not there, not doing it.
Over, under on 6 years old, Oscar?
Say over.
Say over?
I think she must be nine.
I'm going to say under just because I posted
8 years old.
She's eight?
She's
8 years old.
Oh, so I lost.
Ba-ta-da. So, great. Now that we have that out of the way, if you want to go to book events, you should go because they're actually really fun and informative. And speaking of inspiration, like just being around people who are doing these kinds of things helps you generate and react.
Sure.
And
yeah.
So if Lawrence wanted to read some of his stuff at a book event, there's a book event for that? Like an open mic type thing?
Oh, there's tons of open mics. Tons of platforms where you can read stuff.
Why don't you do that, Lawrence?
I should. It's been a long time since I did non-rap in front of people. You ever been to the New Eureka Poets Cafe?
Uh-uh.
You've never been there?
No.
What? You've heard of it, though,
right? I've only been in New York eight months now.
That's true.
So I haven't done everything.
Yes. I feel like experience with rap would make you a really good performer of books, you know?
Sure. I mean, sure. But, I mean, who wants to hear me talk about like space detectives and
I wonder if the deadline is done. And there's also this really interesting group called Undiscovered Countries. And I think I don't know if they're affiliated with the New York School of the Arts, or if they just happen to be a bunch of students mm-hmm. from Tisch who are running it. But they also have like a platform, and they actually asked for submissions for science fiction. Let me fact check. let me make sure before I start promoting this that it's still something that you can
on the spot fact checking.
Yeah, technology.
Apparently also submit to...
4 days left to submit, seeking non-traditional sci-fi pieces for the January 18th show. So they do this. They find people, and then you have a stage.
Non-traditional?
Non-traditional sci-fi pieces. So if you're interested, they have a Facebook page, Undiscovered Countries.
Check it out. You submit a written sample?
It looks like you're emailing it in, but if you want to email in a soundbite, I'm sure they would listen to it.
Wonder if that has anything to do... Did you hear about the controversy?
They have a picture... What?
They have a picture of what?
Which spaceship is that?
The X-Wing?
An X-Wing. It's a Star Wars, but it's a burrito instead of like the main body.
I was going to say, that X-Wing looks weird.
It's a Star Wars.
It's a Star Wars thing.
That's a fat X-Wing.
I've watched them all.
what controversy were
at the latest, I believe it was the Hugo Awards. It might have been the Nebula Awards. It might have been neither of those. It's one of the big sci-fi awards that happens. One of, I think, the most legitimate gripes with people have had with science fiction is that it, like many genres, is pretty much run by old white men, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm.
Talking about very America. Traditional kind of stuff.
Yeah. And it's
not a lot of diversity at all. And then this year, the people who are doing these awards decided to kind of like, there's been a lot of more. A lot less of that reason. There's been a lot more people people of color, diversity.
You want to diversify.
Writing, and the people who are doing these awards recognize that, and I guess maybe nominated a bunch of people who had never been nominated before, and there was such a backlash.
Because it didn't feel legitimate?
Because all these people...
From the public?
From the old white men writers.
Who cares?
Right? Who were very upset.
They were dethroned.
They were dethroned, you know? Yeah. And
so you think that's why they might be seeking non-traditional?
Maybe non-traditional. Just maybe it has nothing
well,
to do with it.
Yeah,
so but it's not maybe think of that. Code for
or they're
minority
just
written
pushing
or for I mean stuff that you know traditional sci-fi like does not necessarily examine issues of like.
So your new idea might be good for that, right?
That's true.
Or just conceptually pushing out of the genre a little bit.
But then, have you ever read Ursula Le Guin?
Yes.
Right. So I just read The Left Hand of Darkness,
uh-huh.
Which I didn't realize until I was finished. The title is totally a nod to Joseph Conrad, Heart of Darkness. Right.
Oh.
Left Hand of Darkness, Heart of Darkness.
Makes sense.
And it's about a guy. Mind blown. It's about a guy on a. Like a journey through a different place, like a wild kind of place. But yeah, in that book, the people on this one planet, they're gender fluid, like literally biologically gender fluid. They become women sometimes, and they become men sometimes. Like, and when they're not in heat or whatever, they're both.
Choose?
It kind of like somehow in her mind, I guess, it's somehow there's like a pheromonal kind of
like
relationship that happens and like kind of inevitably if you're going
to
partner up with somebody.
Is it like this hokey like when the like population is dwindling, people suddenly like are needing to reproduce, then there's the boys and the girls and they all like go
No,
into
it's
heat.
Like it's when they all get randy, they decide to to like grow some genitals.
So a person would... I actually heard
Why
about this, because it's in because transitioning through gender issues, it's like the sci-fi way to do it.
Okay.
It's like, well, what if we just eliminated gender as a thing, and then you can just choose?
Yeah, it's from the 70s,
so
too.
Does a person mostly spend their life as like a neither?
As a neither,
and then you.
And there's a word for it. It's like basically heat. It's like when they're in whatever this word is. I can't remember exactly. And then they're ready to reproduce, and they take on a certain.
It's kind of like locusts. They like biologically change and become locusts. They become a different creature.
Well,
interesting.
Believe it or not, we have 10 minutes left.
Oh, wow.
Less than. And that's I like little. To end my shows with rapid fire. Do you guys listen to Tim Ferriss?
No. I've heard rapid fire.
Rapid fire.
Yeah.
It's not hard. I ask you questions. Pew, you pew, answer pew, pew. Fast or slow. I don't care if we get through two or all of them. First rapid fire question. Are you ready?
Yes.
What book have you not gotten around to reading?
Oh, this is so embarrassing. This is so embarrassing.
Please share.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
I've not read that.
Really?
I did see the stage play, and I was like, I think I was 11, and my dad took me, and I was like, what is happening?
I would say most, but I did read some Jane Austen in college that he didn't read. Actually, no, I passed by watching movies.
The one class I failed.
Oh, Jane Austen?
Yeah.
You haven't gotten around to reading all the books that you're not going to read because you don't want to damage the spines.
I'm a collector.
What book do you remember your parents reading to you?
Ooh, parents reading to me?
Yeah.
I honestly don't remember my parents reading a lot to me because I remember reading myself from a very, very young age.
You're like, you're annoying, go away. I don't need you.
I can do this better.
I remember my mom was reading Angela's Ashes, so I read part of it with her, and then I read it on my own, one of the few books I read that I really, 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 really love.
And, interesting.
So I would say that.
Nice. Hmm. Do you have any routines or rituals related to your reading and or writing?
I've got several. You can go first.
You're like, this is going to be a minute.
No, I mean, I ritually read like once a year. and I like to write when I'm moving. So I like to write in the train. Sometimes I go through good little spurts or in a plane. I like writing while traveling.
Awesome.
Go ahead.
I do this thing because I'm a fidgeter. And if I'm reading, I will sit there. I mean, this is radio, so you can't see what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, what are you doing?
He's twirling his
twirling
hair.
Twirling my hair. I'll sit there and do this. It's, like, very reassuring to me. Other than that, I really like to I find I can be pretty productive when I go out with my laptop. A lot of people like to sit around and, like, drink coffee, like, at a coffee shop.
Sure.
But they're not real alcoholics, of course.
I like to drink a beer and write. And I think it
relaxes
fine.
You.
Yeah.
Open up the flow.
Exactly.
Why not?
Excuse me.
Brilliant. Is there a book that influenced your transition to puberty? I found that sometimes people have like a book that just like changed them during
transition
those formative years.
To puberty. Wow. Huh. I don't know.
Like a book from high school or junior high that stands out to you.
Like I said, Catcher in the Rye really does. I feel like that's pretty cliche. I feel like that's right.
Nada, say nada.
Nothing.
Nothing. How do you find the books that you read? So you read very few books.
Very few.
Do you choose which ones get to pass the test?
Because I tell them to.
Ah.
it's people's suggestions. It's gifts that I get. It's been like sitting in my bookshelf for so long. I'm like, it's probably time.
It's been there for 10 years.
If you went to Nicaragua with the guy who wrote the book.
Yeah, I'm super excited.
I should probably read that.
this I started. It's really good.
Yeah.
Nice.
I find myself, so I don't like to carry physical books around anymore. I know we've talked about this before. I know people feel some type of way about it. I don't mind having like iBooks on my phone and I'll read on there. Mm-hmm. And, when you go to the iBooks bookstore, they're pretty good. Other people who bought this book also bought this book. And then.
Yeah, sometimes recommendations, mm-hmm. you're like.
And they're way
Thank
cheaper,
you.
Right?
They're a bit cheaper.
I mean, the
Depends.
One, they're really cheaper when they just came out because when books first come out, right, they only come out in hardcover. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And those are 25, 30 bucks.
Yeah, they're pretty pricey. But some people are like, go hard.
Oh, I just bought the new Aziz Ansari book. I'm excited to read that.
Yeah.
I
awesome.
Bought two copies by mistake.
If you need another copy, email in.
Christmas gift.
Speaking of... email me if you're listening. I really would love to hear what you think about the show. It's really easy, all lowercase, all spelled out, inkandworm@gmail.com. Also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr. So help me figure out social media. Great, thanks. What authors, I'm really curious about this for you, Oscar. What authors are showcased on your bookshelf?
What authors? There's a lot of sociology books from school. I have Malcolm X, Che Guevara, Gabriel Garcia Marquez, The Godfather. I really like that book. Mario Puzo. Mm.
Yeah.
And I have a few of the Game of Thrones books that I haven't read yet.
Nice. Yeah, I read the first chapter of the first book.
Me too. It was really good. It was just like the first scene of the show.
And then I started watching the movie.
Exactly.
Or the show, yeah.
And they did such a good job.
Except in the show, when the guy that they're executing who ran away is the little kid in the show, but in the book it's the old man.
Whoa.
They changed that.
What?
Changes everything.
Mm-hmm. What's the best writing advice you've been given?
Just put it down. Just do it. Just put it down. Get it on the page.
Just, it's like vomit. You just have to like.
It is.
Let it go.
Let it go.
And I think.
Like vomit. Oh no!
Sorry.
And I think also, just like, you know, your initial expectation of what it's going to be okay with things changing because it's likely to become something completely different when it's done.
Well, and I think that's how you know you're on the right track when you're like, oh, this wasn't my plan, but this follow that.
I mean, that for me is one of the most exciting things about writing, especially.
But then it gets bigger.
Yeah. But like,
and then you never finish.
Short stories turn into sagas.
Right. But like waiting to see what your characters are going to get into. Like I sometimes am interested to find out.
Like what's going to happen?
What's going to happen? And then I have to get there and then it happens. It's great. Yeah.
So do you cross train before you write? Like do you do something? So for example, meditation, or do you like go for a walk to brainstorm? Or
I definitely don't smoke before I write.
Definitely don't smoke. Got it.
Yeah.
No, I mean, other than that, like, no, I just, you know, gotta be like, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I gotta be like fed. Like, I can't write if I'm hungry. I know that's a little weird, but like,
no, that's solid. You know? Food grounds me so much.
Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? But solid. I feel like it's super true. You can't access that higher level unless you have
your... I think the time of day in which you write is also significant.
Yeah,
like writing in the morning.
You have to find your time.
Yeah.
Sometimes people have more energy in the morning, evening.
Right.
Midnight.
I have a cousin, Greg Ames, who actually has a book been out for a while called Buffalo Lockjaw, which is fantastic novel. And he, I just spoke to him recently, and he was saying he wakes up every morning very early, and then I think it, what did he say, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. are his hours, yeah.
Great. Well, thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Empty Orchestra is next, exploring the dynamic relationship between song and singer in the context of karaoke with Angelica and Amanda. And I'll leave you with a word, take it or leave it. The word is, gone. The word is gone. No, it's not. The word is lugubrious.
Ooh. Wait.
Lugubrious.
Are you going to give the definition too? Or
no.
No?
You figure
it's your
it
job.
Out.
Yeah.
Lugubrious. I think it's L-E-G.
Nope. We're still playing Star Wars on accident?
There's no problem with that.
There. Well, you know, life happens. Here we go.
Oh, no.
Microphones and try to act like they're the coolest.
I'd rather get a book and read it. Now.
Let's go!
I am the coolest man on Facebook, I'll tell you.
I got the most friends, friendly like the postman. Base one, known to keep it tight like a clothespin. And when I wrote it, no, you didn't know me. Now you know me and the homies like I'm fucking Don Quixote or a Carl Weaver. I may be Lady Annabelle. I had it swell until I saw the score. I added 12 to the 100. Basically, I'm the base crook. Stealing honeys, Yogi Berra up the Facebook. I'm not the average type, I'm something special. Like a RZA instrumental or a chocolate covered pretzel. Wanna wrestle, a wrestle? Maybe get to poking. I'ma send out all these messages to see if legs are open. No, I'm into chatting. The high school's in Manhattan, but the college with the knowledge and the polish and the rapping. It'd be in the Hudson Valley. And crazy girls like Allie, fuck a Sally, blaze a Cali with the Halley in the valley. In the Maui Wowie be the interest. A job collecting interest, that is interesting in business. I'm into different things. I live for women, need a mistress. Life move fast, so slow down, you might miss it.
Thanks, Ferris.
I've got more friends than you. I'm a Facebook legend, and you know it's true. I said I'm not more friends than you. All your sucker MCs get squashed under my tennis shoe. Never thought I'd do it, but I went.